Thank you for the introduction. Hello, everyone. Good afternoon. Welcome to my talk. And my name is Zheng Yu, and I'm here to present the energy tech on server systems. This is a joint work with my colleague Meng Junxue, who is now affiliated with University of Arkansas and Little Rock, and my advisor Haining Wang. So energy and power saving is becoming increasingly important nowadays. As the cost of commodity hardware continue to decrease, the energy cost becomes a major factor in the total cost of ownership for server systems and large cluster and data centers in general. And besides the cost concern, the environmental impact is also another concern. And probably most of us have read the news back a couple years ago, and researchers have shown that approximately every 2 Google searches use the same amount of energy that we use to cook a cup of coffee. On a much grander scale, and every year, millions of tons of carbon dioxide has been generated in order to power data centers. And from this figure in 2007, we can see that the global data center carbon emissions are already comparable to all these very sized countries. And I don't have the data right now, but it's estimated as of the end of this year, the carbon emission of data centers will double from that figure. So this is becoming a problem. And in order to face the challenge and increase the power efficiency for servers, energy proportional computing has been proposed and widely adapted. So energy proportional computing aims to make servers consume energy proportional to its workload. And back in our lab, we have 2 testbed servers. One of them is bought in 2007, and one of them is in 2009. And the configuration of these servers are comparable to the mainstream servers at the time of the purchase. And as we can see from this figure here, the power profile of the old 2007 servers is quite different from the 2009 server. And we break the power usage down into 3 categories here. And the first is idle, the next is CPU being fully occupied, and the next, the CPU and hard drive being fully occupied. And from this figure, we can see that the newer servers consume slightly more energy than the old servers when they are at full load. This can be attributed to the newer servers having a much higher computational power and higher storage capacity, etc. However, at idle, we can see that the newer servers actually consume much less power than the older servers. And overall, the newer servers have much wider dynamic power range than the older servers. It can increase from the 130 watts at idle to over 300 watts at full load. That's over 130% of change. And this large change tells us 2 things. The first thing is that we're actually making very good progress on increasing the server energy efficiency. This is really good. However, the second thing it tells us is that there's a problem, because the large dynamic range introduced a large variable on the servers, which are not being monitored or protected. And this is a vulnerability. And the exact vulnerability is as following. The energy efficiency, efficient computing assumes a very collaborative working environment. The power savings comes passively, dependent on the workload. However, we all know that not all workload consumes equal amount of energy. Back to our previous example, we all know that some Google searches uses amount of energy to cook a cup of coffee. However, it's reasonable to guess that for some queries we send to Google that Google are well prepared to serve, it takes them very little amount of energy to serve. For example, it can cook only a teaspoon of coffee. However, for some requests that Google are not well prepared, it takes them much more effort to serve. And the energy usage probably enough to cook a pot of coffee. So we can imagine that what happens if the attacker actually figure out the patterns of the queries, which can trigger a high amount of energy consumption, and submit them every time so that each request forces Google to cook a pot of coffee. Well, they'll have to pay for a lot of coffee then. So let's formulate the exact attack vector. So the attack vector comes from analysis of the triggering conditions of high energy consuming requests and isolate those requests and reproduce them in high concentration. Notice with, I said the concentration, not large amounts, which algorithm I will mention in the next few slides. With this attack vector, a lot of services are vulnerable. Those are open services, such as search engine, knowledge base, public forms. And a common property of these servers, of these services, is that they have little or no control over the type of request that comes. And thus, the overall energy consumption of the servers is largely dependent on the type and amount of workload. We go ahead and perform an examination on the Wikipedia Miro server. We choose Wikipedia because it's a publicly available large-scale database. And we believe it's representative to the standard open internet services. We discovered an attack vector on the Wikipedia Miro server by profiling the server. Wikipedia is powered by MediaWiki, which is a large-scale content management, distributed content management system. And for efficient serving purposes, it employs two levels of caching, object cache and memory cache. So the page contents in the Wikipedia is actually not stored in the standard HTML format, but in the so-called wiki markup format for easy maintenance purposes, I assume. But to serve pages to client browsers, those pages have to be parsed and regenerated into a standard HTML. So the object cache is used to store the dynamically generated pages so that not every request would consume a large amount of time to in order to reparse and generate HTML pages. The memory cache is used mainly by the database to cache the recently executed queries. So we profile the power consumption of servers and different caching scenarios. And on the figure, we can see that when the page is fully cached, the server is pretty efficient on serving requests, only consume 4 joules of energy per request. However, when there's no memory cache, the server consumes 12 joules. But if there's no object cache, the servers consume much more, up to over 60 joules of per request. And this large variation in power consumption gave us a key to energy attack. So the key is basically to generate cache misses, because each cache missed query consumes much more, much higher per request energy consumption. So another key to successfully launch energy attack is basically to avoid generating anomalies. Be low profile and non-obtrusive. The attack must not generate traffic anomaly, and it must not cause obvious performance degradation. Because if you imagine that as an attacker, I launch a very high profile attack on the server, yes, it will cost a lot of power consumption. However, it will trigger a wide range of alarms. And as the administrator will be alerted, and action will be taken to suppress attack. So in the end, I probably cost $2 of extra power consumption, not a big deal. However, if the attacker is able to generate low profile attack, and the attack is not going on unnoticed for weeks, months, quarters, and in the end, if you pay the yearly power bill, it'll burn a hole in the pocket. So how are we going to achieve these two keys? Well, the studies in the web access profiling give us some hints. First, how to generate more cache misses? Well, the studies have shown that the frequency of web pages being accessed is inversely proportional to its rank, which is called Zipf's law. Seeing a much simpler description, a small number of pages is being accessed very often, and a large number of pages has not been accessed very often or not at all. So this is the reason cache works efficiently. However, this gives us attackers some hints that in order to generate cache misses, they will just have to visit the web pages in a very different pattern from the Zipf distribution. And this will cause a large higher probability of hitting the code pages and then thus generate cache misses. And next, how to achieve stealthiness? Well, the studies also have shown that request inter-arrival time of human users follows the Pareto distribution. And as an attacker, we could simply mimic the normal users by sending requests at a low to normal rate and follow the Pareto distribution. And as a result, the attack queries cannot be differentiated from the normal queries in terms of the timing properties, such as the average rates and the inter-arrival time. So we go ahead and perform a measurement study on the this type of attack on our victim servers. The configuration of the victim servers is listed above, and this is basically the 2009 server. We perform our experiment as following. First, we by profiling the server, and we find out the server is able to stably support about 100 benign clients. And then we vary vary the benign workload. And at each workload, we launch our attack at different intensity. And we measure the effect of the attack in terms of the power consumption and the latency increase. The power consumption is what we wanted to achieve. And latency increase is not what we wanted to avoid. And from this figure, this is the profiling of the server's latency. This is a profile of the server's latency corresponds to the different number of benign clients. So as we can see from this figure, from 10 to 100 benign clients, the server's response time increases steadily and slowly. However, when the benign workload increases above 100, we can see that the response time increases much faster, and so is the distribution. The timing distribution of the latency increase. And in fact, at these workloads, some of the clients start to receive HTTP 500 errors. So we determined that at these rates, the server could not stably support those clients. So we do not consider the situations. So we profile the server's energy consumption at different benign workloads, sustainable benign workloads. And we can see from this figure that the server energy consumption increases steadily, which is another proof that the server is behaving more energy proportionally. And of course, in the ideal case, the line will cross the y-axis at zero, but we're not there yet. So we first launch our attack at very high benign workloads. And as we would expect, the attack is not being able to generate much more power consumption. However, the latency grows very fast. So this tells us that we could not effectively increase power consumption without being discovered at very high workloads. How about normal workloads? Well, as we can see here, before the number 30, which is 30 malicious clients, the energy consumption increases is much more than the latency increase, which tells us that we can do a little bit more. The attackers can generate a little bit more energy waste at medium workloads. And at low workloads, well, it's as we would expect, the energy consumption increase is always higher than the latency increase. And it tells us that at low workloads, the attack is much more effective. And this is the overall latency increase at different benign workloads and varying attack intensity. And this figure is the overall power consumption increase and different benign workloads and attack intensity. And what we did here is hard to visualize, but I'll just describe here. What we did is basically find a feasible region where the attack does not generate a significant response time increase. And we figure out the maximum achievable power increase that the attack can result. And we find out that our attack can normally generate 6.2% to 40% of power consumption increase. And for a typical server workload, the attack is able to generate about 21% to 42% of power increase. This concludes our measurement study. So besides the cache attack, there are also some alternative energy attack vectors. The first example is the algorithmic complexity attack. Well, this attack targets the algorithms that have a very high worst-case running time, such as a plain quicksort or a naive hash table, etc. So this attack is originally proposed as a DOS attack, DOS denial of service attack, against the server systems. However, it can be adapted to use as an energy attack because the attack targets CPU and the processor are the most power-consuming devices in a server system. But in order to successfully launch energy attack, this attack intensity has to be watered down because we want to achieve stealthiness. And also, we wanted to target the non-computational intensive attack, such as the file depositing services. This is because we want to avoid causing obvious performance degradation of the servers. One of the example is a well-known vulnerability in the Linux directory cache, kernel directory cache. The kernel employs very simple hash function for quick file name lookups. However, this hash function is vulnerable to a name collision attack. So for public services such as FTP service, where the user is able to control the file name, the attacker could launch the attack, could set up the attack by uploading thousands of files with colliding file names. And then the attack can be performed by doing file-related operations such as download, rename, or read-write metadata. Another type of attack vector is the so-called sleep deprivation attack. Well, this attack is originally proposed as a power attack, power denial service attack against sensor networks because sensors have limited power reserves. However, for server systems, the attack is also applicable. So this attack does not require a very high power, high per unit power consumption. So it does not necessarily target the CPU. Instead, the attack is effective on the components that have a large dynamic power range. For example, we all know that the hard drive consumes from 12 to 16 watts of power at operational states. However, when hard drive is in spin down state, it only consumes less than 1 watt of power. Although individual hard drives, the power consumption of individual hard drive is not significant. However, there are file servers have tens of hard drives, and this number accumulates quickly to a significant amount. And we can imagine that some malicious file access patterns can interfere with power management schemes in a server system and prevent expected hard drive spin down, and thus cause a lot of power consumption wastage. So how are we going to deal with this hack? Well, this is unfortunate news that right now we're not quite there yet, because the key of defense is still missing. Well, in order to fight enemy, what we need is to be able to see the enemy first. So we wanted to differentiate all these high energy consuming malicious requests. However, what we have at hand is not good enough to do this. Well, what we have is coarse-grained power management systems, such as the power meter I used for this experiment. Well, it could tell us, yes, that we are under attack. However, because we cannot differentiate the malicious attackers, the malicious type of request from the benign request, well, we just have to suck it or turn off the server, but we're not going to do that. What we do have at hand is a bunch of fine-grained performance counters, and the previous work have proposed to estimate the energy consumption by using these performance counters. Well, these methods are very good for single-task systems, such as the mobile phone and PDAs, et cetera. But for server systems, well, server systems are designed to massively produce requests in parallel. And therefore, it's the performance counters of different parallel tasks would often interfere with each other, and thus the power consumption estimation using the performance counters will be widely inaccurate. What we really need is some fine-grained power counters, such as, for example, you could imagine that there is a power counter in the CPU built, which tells us in the past few milliseconds how much power has been, how much energy has been consumed. And only with this could we actually be able to differentiate malicious workloads from the benign workloads. So at the future work, we would like to extend this beyond a single server. We have performed a comprehensive study on one single standalone web server. However, this attack, although targets the Wikipedia mirror server, it does not actually apply to a the actual Wikipedia server. This is because the actual Wikipedia is hosted behind a grid of cache servers. So essentially, each one of their pages is actually fully cached. So the attack does not necessarily really apply to the real Wikipedia servers. However, as long as the power consumption, the large variations in power consumptions continue to be unmonitored and undefended, we believe this attack always exists. We just have to find the attack vector, find the key. And for server clusters, server farms, data centers, particularly interesting because we can imagine that a cloud provider, some malicious cloud providers, could use this energy attack against their competing parties to increase their power consumption and also the operation cost and make their own service rates more attractive to users. So we would also like to find a defense, a feasible defense. We would like to explore software-based countermeasures as a temporary workaround to the lack of hardware support. Particularly, we would like to explore the possibility of inferring the workload by profiling the application behavior. This concludes my talk. Thank you.
My name is Adam. I work for Qualcomm. Have you seen that movie with John Cleese called How to Irritate People?
No.
This is exactly what, it's excellent. It's like, he talks about never doing anything bad enough to actually get people to break down and yell at you. Just keep them on the boil. Ages and ages. John Cleese was onto this. It's a very interesting attack strategy. What about other things like making hard drives, increasing the failure rate on hard drives, and things like that? It seems like it opens up a whole new world of attacks which are just going to become costly and annoying to protect against, but nonetheless, now that you've opened Pandora's box, people are going to have to deal with it.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, there's no real question there. But
my name is David. Have you thought about the effects on heat as well? Like, obviously, as you increase the workload, you're going to increase heat, which is also going to affect cooling costs for large data centers.
Yes.
Have you looked at all on what sort of compounding effects you'll have on the back end, considering these additional factors?
I have researched it a little bit, but I haven't put it in my paper. So as I think, basically, it is said that for every amount of energy generated in a data center, it consumes probably at least equal amount of energy to remove that heat from the data center. So yes, so basically the attack effect actually doubles. Basically, the server consumes more energy, and then it takes much more energy. I mean, at least same amount of energy to remove that heat from the data center.
The second question would be, I didn't see any graphs in your paper about the amount of energy it costs on the attacker's end to carry out the attack. Have you ever looked at the differential between how much work the attacker has to do versus the...
The attack is actually carried out on a just a personal PC. It does not consume much energy at all. The attacker's CPU is actually mostly idle.
Okay. That's what I would expect. But I'm
yes.
All right, thanks.
Let's thank the speaker again.
Thank you.